We are going to look at chapter 20 of Canto 5, which is called Studying the Structure of the Universe. It's more like geography than anywhere else, because it's the rest of Bhumandala, outside of Jambudi. So you know what's going on. Know what you're worried about. And as soon as this comes up, so I've got for you a little kind of summary of this chapter. At first I was doing it like I did the others, but it got a little too complicated and repetitive, so I decided to do it like this. But I have a long little note at the end. ND means note well. But there's another way of doing this thing. I'm not sure. I thought I had it figured out, but I didn't. I thought everything was fine. When I came back, I looked at it, I realized I still had 12 and a half crores, 12 and a half lakhs of yojanas missing, so. We'll have to see what it is. I'm trying to follow this description by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, translated by Gopi Pranadana, and the translation got some problems. Somebody has some problems, maybe just all me. We'll see. But anyway, here is the... So we begin this chapter. Can we turn it on now? Is it? Yeah, it's cool now, right?
Yes, it's a PC thing.
Huh?
It's a PC.
Oh, it's not on there yet, huh? When she does it, she just plugs it in, but when you do it, you have to do this whole thing.
That's because it's not in there.
The switch is automatically, right?
Yeah.
She's cooler than I am. You're able to look at it.
I just don't understand how it goes on. I doubt that most of what happens in this world I discover I don't understand. So. Okay, there you have it now. Here we go. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Here's the text up here. Now I shall describe the dimensions, characteristic forms of the six islands, beginning with the island of Hokkaido. Do I have a copy of that? Yeah, here, this year. Okay, so this is this chapter, huh? 520. So he says here, so as Sumeru Mountain is surrounded by Jambudip is also surrounded by an ocean of salt water. Here we have the concentric circles all the way out. The breadth of Jambudip is 100,000 yojanas, and the breadth of the salt water ocean is the same. So you're going to have an island, and then the next ocean surrounding it, which is the same size. The next island is double, or maybe the island and the ocean together, same thing, is double, and its ocean is double, and then out up till you get to the final ocean, which is the ocean of sweet water, surrounding by Pushkara Dweep. So here it is. Amplaksha Deep is a tree shining like gold. A Plaksha tree is the wave-leafed fig tree. Called Ficus infectoria, the dictionary says, Mona Williams, a large, beautiful tree with small white fruit. You might like to know it's a beautiful tree. According, it's not a Ficus religiosa because it's a banyan. And so this is the wave leaf fig tree.
What's wavy?
I guess the leaves are wavy. You know this kind of tree around here? Waveleaf, fig tree, anyway. It's large and small white fruit of some kind of fig tree.
Huh?
Is that right? But you know what tree I'm talking about. Okay. Okay, anyway, that's this plaksha. It's called the plaksha tree. And it's the same height as the jambu tree. Remember the jambu, from which Jambudvip gets its name. So there's some feature of that, an eponymous feature. Eponymous means that which gives its name to something. You could say the eponymous hero of Oliver Twist, meaning the character Oliver Twist from Who Knows Me. So this is the eponymous feature. And the jambu tree, they're all of them 1,100 yojanas tall. Their canopies cover the same distance, and the trunks are 100 yojanas thick. So these are big, big trees. So the plaksha tree is the same size as the jambu tree. At its root is a fire with seven flames. Now, I don't know what that does. I forgot to put the seven-flamed fire at its base. So it has some old picture got from somewhere that shows seven little candle holders with a thing, but it just says it's a seven-flamed fire. Now, the name of the is Idma Jiva, is the name of the son of Priyarata, who has been given in charge of this island, Idma Jiva. I look, they're all names of the fire gods. Agnidra, which is the name of the priest who kindles the fire, Idma Jiva. I look them up. The fuel's tongue. Idma is fuel, especially for a sacrificial fire. So Jiva is tongue, the tongue of the fuel. So he has that name. And he has seven sons that he divides these islands among. All. Everyone but one has seven sons, and everyone but one divides the island into seven varshas. We'll see how this happens. So he endowed the seven islands with the name of the islands. Here he means varsha. Prabhupada often uses varsha and island and dupa interchangeably, which can lead to some confusion. But here he calls them islands, but I think in the Sanskrit, saptavarsha, see, it's varsha. Into seven varshas, for whom the seven, as his seven sons, and gave into his sons. And then retired from active life to engage in devotional service to the Lord. This happens on every single island. But the last one, which has the Manasodra mountain in the middle, and so is divided among two sons. But in every case, the personage, the son of Priyavrata, divides it among his sons and retires for devotional service. And the descriptions of these islands, as we shall see, in every case, that gives the names of the sons, right? And then there's seven mountains and seven rivers. Everything's very systematic. So the mountains' names are given in every case, and the rivers' names are given in every case. In every case, one can immediately be freed from material contamination by touching or bathing in those rivers. It says that sometimes, and sometimes it doesn't. But I assume they're all somehow or other sacred, purifying rivers. And then there are four castes who correspond to the Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Sudras. But every case, they have their own set of names. The Hamsas, Patangas, Purva Vayanas, and Satyangas. I didn't get the time to do this, but these are meaningful names, and one sooner or later will look them up and see what they all mean. But they're the four varnas. with their special names, Hamsas, Patangas, Urdhvayanas, and Satyangas.
Do they correspond to the
Kshatriyas? Yeah, Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas. If it doesn't say that here, it does in another one. The four Varnas. In fact, it may say it in the you bathe in the rivers, it washes off mode of passion and ignorance. Yeah, see these four? Shatvaraha, Varnaha, the four Varnas. Right? Okay, let me go, I'm sorry, I went down too far.
I presume when they were dividing the rings into seven islands, we're doing like a piece of pie?
It seems, we're just assuming it's an even division. Without, remember, they're rings.
Yes, rings.
So it's not a pie, unless it's a donut. You're cutting the donut into seven sections. Okay. We're just assuming it's like that. The habits of Plakshadweep live for 1,000 years. They are beautiful like the demigods, and they also beget children like the demigods. Remember, that's already been described in reference to the eight Varshas. You get children and you have one child at the end of life. Except, of course, he has seven sons, so I don't know how this works out. But anyway, maybe seven wives, I don't know. But by completely performing the ritualistic ceremonies mentioned in the Vedas and by worshipping the Supreme Personality of God as represented by the sun god, they attain the sun, which is a heavenly planet. Now, you'll see here, each place they worship a particular deity. In Jambudvipa, using small type, I put in the nine. the nine ones worshipped in the different varshas. But here on each island, so here they worship Surya. And then Prabhupada here has a purport. Explaining demigod worship on the one hand, which is condemned by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he says here, by the way, it may be argued that the demigods are important as Lord Vishnu because the names of the demigods are different names of Vishnu. That's a fact. All the names of the gods are names of Vishnu. That's why Prabhupada translated Isha Upanishad when it says Agne Naya Supataraye Ashman, it's addressed to Agni, Agne Naya. Prabhupada translates it, O my Lord, powerful as the fire. Because in this case, Agni is being addressed as Lord Vishnu. Or Vishnu is being addressed as, you say it the other way around, Vishnu is being addressed as Agni. So that's entirely legitimate. Agne Naya Supataya Rang. That when people who are, so this is how demigod worship can actually lead to worship of the Supreme Lord. And it's also explained in the Bhagavad Gita that a sacrifice, which is, this is in the seventh chapter, that a sacrifice which is performed as fruit of activity, if performed in knowledge, can be performed for transcendence. The same mantras as everything, but they're used with the understanding that actually, that when Agni is doing something or Surya is doing something, really Krishna is doing through this agent. So I heard a tape of an initiation Prabhupada did in England, in London, and he named a devotee Ravindra Das. And then Prabhupada said, and who is Ravindra? And you heard the devotee say, the sun god, Srila Prabhupada. He said, no, it is Krishna. There is only one God. So you can understand with this how it might be that you could end up with a kind of idea that the demigods are the same as the Lord. But so there's a little bit of a subtle understanding. But so here now, the prophet explains, therefore it should be concluded, he's explaining the difference, that Lord Vishnu, not Lord Brahma or Lord Shiva, is the supreme personality of Godhead. And then here's the point, as a government officer is sometimes accepted as the entire government, although he is actually but a departmental manager. So the demigods, having achieved power of attorney from Vishnu, act on his behalf, although they are not as powerful as he. If you think about this, we do it all the time. The United States issued a warning to Iran. Now, how did the United States do that? Well, some ambassador or figure in the State Department issued a warning. But when he issued it, it wasn't him. It was the United States, because he was representative. So it's interesting always how someone comes to be the representative. But when you're a representative, that means when one person does things, like the whole country does something. Or in these days, when one official does it, the king does it, because he's an agent. I've seen the state of New York arrested so-and-so. Well, it was a policeman. Or convicted so-and-so. It was a judge. So this is the same way here. So Prabhupada here is insisting on the difference, but also pointing out here that they're not on the same level. But then we see, here's the mantra by which they worship the sun. In every case, it gives the mantra by which the inhabitants worship. In every case, it's a devata, but also being worshipped. It's hard to get it all on here. But see here, pratyasya Vishnu rupayat satyasya ritasya brahmana amritasya cha nityo cha suryam atmanam. So they call him, in every case, it's like suryam atmanam imahi. We approach for failure. Surya, who's actually, here's how Prabhupada does it. Let us take shelter of the sun god, who is a reflection of Lord Vishnu, the all-expanding supreme personality of Godhead, the oldest of persons. They call him Vishnu Rupam, see, a form of Lord Vishnu. Vishnu, and Prabhupada makes this clear, Vishnu is the only worshipable Lord. He is the Vedas, he is religion, he is the origin of all auspicious and inauspicious results. So this is, every case it's like this. They're worshipping Vishnu, but through the form, or in the form of a devata. Yeah.
I was looking at some Vishnu and there in this similar section to this, although he has Soma being worshipped complexity and not
yeah, Surya. This is on Samili Dweepa Soma.
but he does say, even Wilson writes, and Harry, who is all and creator Lord, worship in the content in the form of Soma.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, these prayers actually make it pretty clear. Otherwise, there's a theory propounded by Western Indologists that the early Vedic religion they called henotheism. You ever hear heno? H-E-N-O?
Henotheism.
Yeah, we'll look it up for you. Just a second. I'll get the dictionary definition. Henotheism. You ever heard that before? Probably you're better off not knowing it, but now I've... OK. Okay, there they say, the belief in one God as the deity of the individual family tribe without asserting that he is the only God, considered a stage of religious belief between polytheism and monotheism. But then the other hand, then... the other way it's thought of is that in India, this henotheism develops into the notion that that there's one supreme Lord, but you can worship all the gods as that. That any particular god you worship as the supreme. This theory is there are different tribal or family gods. But this is what is said sometimes like this, when you see that. You look at the prayers in the Samhitas, they do like this. They worship Agni as the supreme, they worship Surya as the supreme, they worship so-and-so as the supreme. But here they're making it clear, here it becomes quite clear that Vishnu Rupa, the form of Vishnu, who is the sun, yeah, of course, Madhvacharya.
They're worshipping Surya as, you know, actually worshipping the Supreme or something, the Godhead represented by Surya.
Yeah, that's
yet
right.
They're attaining the planet of the sun god.
That's so interesting, isn't it?
Like, uh-huh.
It's like mixed.
It's not the Bhagavad Gita says, you know,
yeah.
You worship the demigod.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Interesting. Huh? In every case, it's like that. Uh-huh.
There is a form of Vishnu, not deity, but live Vishnu. Residing on Surya's planet.
Oh yeah, Surya Narayan. And the way we understand the Brahma Gayatri is we're worshipping Vishnu in the sun. Yeah, but there's Surya Narayan. There's Narayan in the sun. It becomes clear, especially in some of these dvipas, Prabhupada, or it becomes clear from the text that they are mixed devotees, these dvipas.
So in all the other dvipas, they're worshipping Soma, Agni, and are they going to the planets of those particular?
Some places it says that, some places it doesn't mention that, but I assume that's what it means. It says here, the demigod Surya, who's characterized as very powerful jiva, or living entity, is a representation of one of the parts of his body. And then he puts it this way, although worship of the sun god is recommended in this mantra, he is worshipped not as the Supreme Personality Godhead. Now you're not confused about who's God, but as his powerful representative, right? And then Prabhupada again wrote many texts to point out that the Supreme Lord and the Devatas. Here we go. As described in this chapter, the inhabitants of the five islands beginning with Plakshadweep worship the sun god, the moon god, the fire god, the air god, and Lord Brahma, respectively. Although they engage in the worship of these five demigods, however, they actually worship Lord Vishnu, the super soul of all living entities, indicated in this verse by the word Patnasya Vishnu Rupam. Okay, so then we go on. And now here's just a general description of all the islands, longevity, sensory prowess, physical and mental strength. Intelligence and bravery are naturally and equally manifest in all the inhabitants of the five islands headed by Plakshadweep. Then, Plakshadweep is surrounded by an ocean of sugarcane juice. I provide here the Sanskrit, Bhikshu Rasa Buddha. Buddha is usually water, but it could be liquid. So it could be liquid of Bhikshu Rasa, or it could be here, Prabhupada, Sura Buddha, an ocean of liquor, but Prabhupada says the ocean that tastes like liquor. So it's not clear to me if this is, these substances are really those substances or something that's like them. Because you wonder, one wonders, how there's life in them and so on, and how out of the milk ocean you can churn out, by adding herbs and everything, you can churn out the moon and so. So I really don't understand this yet. I said, I still don't know if Maharaj Priyavrata goes around in increasingly large one-wheel chariots and makes big ditches. Those ditches then, like, you make a, you know, a car has a, makes a rut in the road and then water fills it. But where does this liquids come from? I don't know that either. Here he gives the ocean of this the name Surasagara, which just means ocean of liquor. I wonder if it's fermented sugarcane juice. The sugarcane juice of the liquor. Yeah, but see, a lot of time I've also looked at this. I've seen him write things the equivalent of sugarcane juice water. Meaning water is just the liquid. Yeah, so. An ocean with the water of milk, you know, something like that. He's done that. So then this next island after Plakshadweep, Samalidipa. And then they mention the river, the liquor ocean, which is beyond me. It's the one that's the same size. So you can see here, when I say here the width, that means the width of the particular feature. The distance is the accumulated ratio, you know, starting from the middle of Meru and going out. So you just add. So then this particular island, there's a Shamali tree, which is the silk cotton tree. Do we know this tree? It's around too. Has big long thorns on it. Also called the Simul tree. And so again, that tree is broad as tall as the Plaksha tree. I assume when they say 100 yojanas broad, that's the trunk, and this tall, and then they give another spread for the branches in Jambudvip. Learned scholars say that this gigantic tree is the residence of Garuda, the king of all birds and the carrier of Lord Vishnu. In that tree, Garuda offers Lord Vishnu his Vedic prayers. They use the word for Garuda, Patri Raj, king of the birds, and Chanda Stutaha, who chants Vedic hymns. He purchased here. Prabhupada says here or somewhere else. Oh yeah, this Nilayam, rest or living place. It's not clear whether he stays there a lot of times or just where he comes to perch every so often. And birds sit somewhere, they perch. So this is, at any rate, his perch, whether it's long-term or short-term. It's not clear. So then there's the son of Maharaj Prichabratri, named Yajnu Bahu. I translate that in here too, arms of sacrifice, another name. And then his island, the seven tracks given to seven sons, their names are here, right here. And then again, the seven mountains and the seven rivers, their names are given. The Prabhupada says, iti, thus, yeah, Prabhupada says, they are still existing.
Shaka Sringa is also the name of Govardhana.
Shatashringa?
Yeah. Because it has 100
horns or peaks. Yeah, okay. I'm sure these names get around. Sahasra Shruti. Nice names. And then the rivers, including the Saraswati. Nanda, we know some of these rivers around here too. Okay, strictly following the cult of Varnashram Dharma. The inhabitants of those islands who are known as Shruti-dharas, Virya-dharas, Vasundha-dharas, and Ishana-dharas all worship the expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. See how he says it now? The Supreme Personality of Godhead, known as Soma, the moon god. Somam Atmakam, so represented by the living entity known as Soma. They are Vedamayam, fully convinced in Vedic knowledge. And then here's their mantra. By his own rays, the moon god. This is interesting. Somebody asked me about this, and this is where I got it from. Has divided the month into two fortnights, known as Shukla and Krishna. Mm. Shukla meaning when the moon is, waning and waxing. So when it's waning is Shukla. When it's going smaller, when it's full and goes down, that's Shukla. And when it begins with a new moon, which is you don't see anything, all the way up, waxing, and that's Krishna, the dark fortnight of the moon. For the distribution of food grains to the pitas and the demigods. So this is what happens. When it's the dark moon, the dark fortnight, the food grains go to the pitas. When it's the Shukla paksha, it goes to the devatas. The demigod of the moon is he who divides time, it says here, into this Vibhajana, into Krishna and Shukla. Remember, you know, mostly people who are in the Vedic culture follow the lunar calendar. The lunar day is called a Titi. And in a month, I think there's 30 in a month. But anyway, 30 lunar days corresponds to like something like 27 and a half solar days or something like that. They don't line up. That's why you've got to keep adjusting things. I'll get it right. I'm sorry, I don't want to give you wrong information. Titi, a lunar day. Oh, 30th part of the whole lunation. In other words, 30 means you take, you know, the whole cycle, the lunar cycle, from full moon to full moon. You divide it into 30. Rather more than 27 solar days. 15 titis during the moon's increase constitutes the light half of the moon. So here it says the light half is when it's increasing, and the dark half is when it's decreasing. So from this says just the opposite. And then it gives you this. So that's the Titi. So that is you take a lunar month and then they divide. That's why we have these weird things sometimes where you have the codices on this different day, because the Titi don't actually line up with the days. You know about this stuff? Okay. So 30 parts of the whole lunation. Okay, 30th part. Rather, it's 27 point something solar days. So the light half is when the moon goes from new moon to Shukla. It goes from dark to the increasing. That's the light half. Decreasing in the dark is the dark. When it ends up, do you think about how it ends up? Okay. That's their prayer. No commentary on that. And then we go on to the next island, which is called Kushadweep, which is again now it's even bigger. It's doubled again, and it's surrounded by an ocean of what is called Vita Uda. Prabhupada translates as liquid ghee. I guess it's not solid. It's maintaining the temperature that it's. That is liquid. Around this Kushadweep comes of Kusha grass, from which the island takes its name. This grass, which was created by the demigods by the will of the Supreme Lord, appears like a second form of fire. Devakrita means made by God made, divinely made, as Prabhupada says, is made by the demigods, by the will of the Supreme Lord. He puts the director behind that. So it's some special grass. Kutastamba means tufts, you know, tuft of grass, from which it gives the island the name, its eponymous feature. And Jwalana Eva Aparha, like another fire. Especially the sprouts, it says, the young sprouts. Sprouts are always lighter in color. They illuminate all directions. So it's this kind of effulgent kusha grass.
So Viraja means illumination, right?
Yeah, I didn't look it up. I assume it's what it means, yeah. From here, Prabhupada said, we can make an educated guess about the nature of flames on the moon. There's cooling fire. The moon must be full of flames because without flames there cannot be illumination, so it doesn't accept it as a reflecting body. The flames of the moon, however, unlike those in the sun, must be mild and pleasing. There is a possibility of mild and pleasing flames. This is our conviction. The modern theory that the moon is full of dust is not accepted in this verses, in the verses of Srimad Bhagavatam. Then he quotes Vishnu Chakravarti, the Kusha grass illuminates all directions, but its flames are very mild and pleasing. This gives some idea of the flames existing on the moon. Prabhupada has given different also theories of why the moon has cool light. Sometimes he said there must be fire underneath ice, I think at one point someplace he said that. So on. Anyway, we have another sun, Hiranyaksha, another name of Agni, having golden seed. He's king of the island. And delivered to his seven sons, Yata Abhagam, divided according to the process of inheritance. Retired from family life to engage in austerities, the names of his sons are given. Then the boundary mountains and the rivers. Everything very neat and in order here. Then the Kushalas, Kopitas, Abhiyuktas, and Kulakas They are like the Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras respectively, although you see that's not actually in the verse, Prabhupada just explaining that these are the four varnas. By bathing in the waters of these rivers, they all become purified by these waters. They are expert in performing ritualistic ceremonies according to the orders of the Vedic scriptures. Everywhere this is the case. They're real followers of the Vedas. Karma Koshala. They're expert in karma. Karma means, one specific meaning of the word karma is Vedic ritual activity. You look at the elements that make up a sacrifice, one of them is karma. Karma, dharma, the instructions for doing it, karma, the activity, and so on. When they say karma kanda, this is something that's very specific, original meaning of karma. Are the people who are performing, these Brahmins who are performing these sacrifices. According to the orders of the Vedic scriptures, and they worship, see here it says, Bhagavan Tam, unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, manifesting the form of Jataveda. This is an interesting name, Jataveda. It's a name of Agni. And it means, apparently, Jata means all living creatures, everything that's born. So it means he who knows or is known by the Jata. That's Mona Williams, that's my authority for this. You know, some. That's the name of Agni, is Jataveda. And then they give his mantra. O fire god, who is directly Purusha Brahmana, you are part of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, and you carry him all the offerings of sacrifices. That's what the fire does. You put something in there and the fire carries them up in the air to the Lord. Therefore, we request you to offer the Supreme Personality of Godhead the yajnik ingredients we are offering the demigods, for the Lord is the real enjoyer. Prabhupada is really... They address him, Devanam Purusha Anganam, the demigods, they're the limbs of the Supreme Purusha, the Purusha. Yajna, please carry by Yajna these oblations to the Purusha. So, Prabhupada's actually, he doesn't say for the Lord is the real enjoyer, he says he's the Purusha. That's what it means, the word Purusha. Prabhupada just expands this. The demigods cannot accept the sacrificial offerings. They simply carry the offerings to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just like the Guru does it, quoting Yasya Prasada, Bhagavata Prasada. Similarly, all the demigods, as faithful servants of the Supreme Lord, hand over to the Supreme Lord whatever is offered to them in sacrificial offerings. There's no fault in worshipping the demigods with this understanding, or to think that the demigods are independent of the Supreme Personality of Godhead or equal to him. So it's really, demigod worship is not exactly forbidden. I even heard one recording where they were asking Prabhupada, can we worship the demigods? And he says, yeah, why not? Don't we go to rich people and say, sir, please give us this donation, please build this building for us? Okay, so now, going beyond the ocean of ghee, outside of that, here's an island called Kramchadweep, which is twice as big, and which is surrounded by the ocean of milk. So it's eponymous feature is not a plant. First time it's not a plant, but a mountain called Krauncha. Mount Krauncha, from which the island takes its name. There's a story connected to this mountain. Although the vegetables, he means the vegetation, living on the slopes of Mount Krauncha, were attacked and devastated by the weapons of Kartikeya, the mountain has become fearless because it is always bathed on all sides by the ocean of milk and protected by Varuna Dev. So behind that lies a story. We don't have it here. He's fearless. Vibhaya become fearless because protected by Varuna and always bathed by the by milk. I don't know why being bathed by milk makes you fearless, but
what is the
word used? What? I looked it up, I couldn't get a meaning for it. It's just, they say it's a proper name of a mountain. They give a name up in Himalayas named Krauncha too, attacked by Kartikeya. But they obviously are confused with this one, but they don't give a meaning of the word Krauncha in Mona Williams. Well, there wasn't, in whatever version it is I have, the one that Gopi brought it on a stand, and put, I don't know what the other one is. Are you sure it's another edition? Because now it's been reprinted and much better paper and much clearer print.
So you get a much better scan.
Yes, yeah, you get a much clearer scan, right. But I don't know if it's just the same dictionary. I'm surprised at the Mona Williams dictionary, you should know this. The real dictionary is made by Germans. German scholars, and it's in German. And Mona Williams, they just translated into English. Yeah. But the original, the guy who did all the diligent work, there has not been a real good dictionary since then. This is one of the big lackings in the field of Indology. Because now, see, Mona Williams, those people, whoever made the German guys who made that dictionary up, compiled that dictionary, only looked at so much literature. Now there's so much more literature that's been available, cataloged, put in. You could really do a much better job now, more thorough job. Because I showed you how they, a lot of times they attest where the meaning of a word comes from, and how the same word can have radically different meanings according to the kind of text or the school of thought. But nobody wants to do that kind of work, I guess. I don't know. I mean, it's just like, phew. To compile a dictionary, you got to be like, you realize that's your whole life. That's the only thing you can do your whole scholarly life is compile a dictionary. Now, there are people who do things like that, but the Sanskrit one is going to take more than one person, too. It's going to take like
more than one lifetime.
More than a lifetime. It's the effect of, I don't think anyone wants to do it. Anyway, so we're stuck with this very old Mona Williams dictionary.
When was it done? After it is in English?
When was it translated into English? What's this? Which we're just talking here. What's happened? Oh, I opened up my wrong thing. That's my email. Now I can't turn it off until it's. There you go. Thank you. Front matter. Script. That's fine. Don't send a report to Microsoft. The first edition appeared in 1872. The extent of its indebtedness of the great seven-volume Sanskrit-German thesaurus compiled by the two eminent German Sanskritists, Otto Bünfink and Rudolf Roth, with the assistance of many distinguished scholars such as Professor A. Weber of Berlin, then only completed as far as the beginning of the letter V, was fully acknowledged by me in the preface. Now he's saying it's my work, but that's the first edition was 1872. So you see, we're a good long time past the expiration date of this work. Huh? There is an appendix to it.
Oh, it's appendix.
No, it's not.
They have a supplementary
thing, but that's hardly the job that you need to be done. We got two of these open now, huh? TT. The ruler of this island was another son of Mahapriyasvrata, Gritapista. Oh, this is an interesting name, huh? It's also on the paper, I think. One whose back is brilliant with ghee, especially Agni and his horses. That's what the dictionary says, Gritapista. I guess Agni gets covered with ghee, and his horses get covered with ghee.
Yeah.
Who are his horses? So again, they have seven sons. Gritapristha Maharaj retired from family life and took shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord, the soul of all souls, who has all auspicious qualities. Thus he attained perfection. He seems to have been, by this description, more of a devotee than the others. This is the impression you get from the way they... Hare Charana Aravindam Upa Jagama took shelter of the lotus feet of Hari. And then they spend some time describing Hari as Bhagavata Parama Kalyana Yashaha and Atma Bhutasya. So, this Gritapristha, he's, anyway, that's just the impression from this text. Now the names of the sons, the boundary mountains, the rivers, and then the names of the inhabitants of the castes, Purushas, Rishabhas, Dravinas, and Devakas, and now, they're worshipping Varuna. It's interesting how they say this. Devam Apam Purena Anjali Yajate. They worship Apamayam, Varuna, who's Apamaya. It could be the form of water, but he says the Lord of Water, as the Devam Apa, with water comes in their hands. Anjali, this is Anjali. Prabhupada always says with folded hands because it's just sort of English way, but really it's with pressed together palms, literally speaks as Anjali, so like this. They worship him that way. And he says they're worshiping a deity made of stone or iron. Asma. And then they say to him, Abha, O water. O water of the rivers, says here. You have obtained energy from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purusha Virya. You have Virya, you have potency from the Purusha. Are you endowed with the potency of the Purusha? And therefore you purify the three planetary systems known as Bhu, Bhuvar, and Swar. So the rivers are flowing all over. By your constitutional nature, You take away sins. And that's why we are touching you, kindly continue to purify us. So this is addressing Apaha, but when they say Apaha, they mean the Lord of Water, who is described here as Varuna. But remember, the mountain Kramsha is protected by Varuna. Particularly so, there's a whole backstory here. And surrounded by the milk ocean, apparently Kramsha's on the outer border because he's bathed by this ocean of milk. Because the inner border is liquid ghee and the outer border is milk. I have an hypothesis, check out, that all these liquids all are something to do with sacrifice, even liquor. Because you remember Tvastha? Tvastha had how many faces? Tvastha is the one who had, I think, 4 heads. And then he was decapitated. I meant to look this up, but I got all involved in numbers. But one of his faces was for drinking liquor. He was a priest, and he was a priest that was enlisted to do a sacrifice. It's because it's so Indra could get a weapon to kill Vritrasura. And there was a mistake. Anyway, so Tvastha had 4 heads. One for drinking different things. I should find it out. It was just, forgive me, I'm sorry, I didn't do this.
I guess that's not like something stinky
as
we experience on this planet.
Huh?
I guess that's some kind of liquor we experience on this planet.
I don't know what it is. Nope, that doesn't come up together.
Wilson calls it wine.
No. I can't figure it out. They got 27 hits here. We'll find it fast. Tvastha is the name of the sun too. Who's the Tvastha? But there's a whole story. After Vishwaroopa was killed, his father Tvastha performed a sacrifice to kill King Indra. Here's Vishwaroopa. Yeah, Vishwaroopa. Yeah, Vishwaroopa was beheaded. It's not Tvastha, it was Vishwaroopa. Yeah, he had 3 heads. Excuse me. He had 3 heads. He used one to drink somaras, another to drink wine, and the third to eat food. Huh? Yeah, wine is sura. Yeah, pita. So here's a priest who has one head for drinking sura. So I would like to investigate to see whether that's in connection with some Vedic ritual. Because one is somaras, we know that comes from the sacrifice. So anyway, I just wouldn't be surprised at all. Because I think some sacrifices are pretty far out. I mean, like animal sacrifice, for example. We don't like to talk about it, but there's a lot of animals. Anyway, there's no more shocking that they would drink wine than it would kill an animal to me. Anyway, that's something I like to understand about these waters because in the connection with sacrifice, these all play a part, because the sons of Priyavrata are all named after the fire god. And you can see how the Vedic sacrificial performances play a part in this. I'm just curious about that, that's all.
Wine in a container and completely impure.
Yeah, that's right. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's right. How can it be a sacrifice? Because they do something with it, it's used for some purpose. Otherwise, what's this priest, Vishwarup, very elevated person, having a head of drinking wine? Maybe that's another story. Maybe it's not connected, but why is there an ocean of Sura to begin with? I mean, of all things.
Now I kind of imagine Christianity, like Jesus drank wine.
Yeah.
But it's, oils and...
But then it becomes a ritual, doesn't it, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway, Prabhupada wasn't entirely against wine himself. He told the devotees, Malati told me this story, that Prabhupada said that it's good to drink wine after your meal to aid digestion. And Malati said, the devotees, can we do that? And Prabhupada said, oh yes. And then she said, everybody's carrying around a little hip flask with wine in it. And so Prabhupada stopped it. But anyway... Because liquors, you should understand, also can have some medicinal, therefore it has potency, and sometimes they end up with different kind of purposes. So it's not entirely evil in that sense.
Just thinking, it could be also sacrifices in the boat.
In what?
In the different modes?
Well, yeah, sure.
I mean, if you're having a sacrifice of wine, which is generally...
Yeah. Well, definitely this kind of stuff goes on in what we call the tantric rituals. Yeah. Still. And it's condemned now. But may have been in the olden days. It was just a different climate and a different time and a different place. And sometimes these things were used in ways that I don't understand. Don't worry about it.
It's like you say, women on the planet, and you have women on the heavenly planets, but that's kind of, you can say women, but they're different than women here, as described.
That's, yeah, that's right.
So the wine up down,
yeah,
there,
I don't know, I don't know.
There,
I'd be more worried if it was an ocean of beer. Phony.
I just found the fourth canto, where it talks about a process of worship where wine is needed in worship of Shiva.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's the kind of tantric mode of ignorance sort of thing, when you use wine. Also, they do the four bad things. Meat, wine, anyway. But let's not talk about them. The waters of the rivers, you obtained energy from the Supreme Personality Godhead. Therefore, you purify by your constitution. We read this. Kind to begin, you purify us. And so Prabhupada discusses the river Ganges and its purifying qualities here. Now here he says this, Dadi Manda Udena, an ocean containing water resembling churned yogurt. According to Mona Williams, this Dadi Manda is whey. Whey, yeah. Mona Williams in 1872, they did not have the word yogurt in English. So Dadi they translated as a kind of thick sour milk. So I think they mean yogurt. I mean, even in the 60s, in America, yogurt was an exotic health food from the Balkans or something like that. Nobody heard of it. Yeah, it was like you said yogurt, what is that? Really, it's just, yeah. Then it caught on, and first health food people, and everybody began to do it, and now it's...
You didn't know in Russia about yogurt until they pulled down the island.
Yeah, well, it came from India. Obviously, people have been doing it a long time. Anyway, they call it, Mona Williams calls Dadi a kind of thick, sour milk. Because they didn't, there wasn't that word yogurt in the English language. It's not, that word yogurt does not come from.
What about churned yogurt?
Well, churned, the word munda. You want to see what the word munda says? This is all things we are researching, right? Munda, down here. Munda, the scum of boiled rice or any grain, the thick part of milk cream. And then they say Dadi Munda, see compare Dadi Munda, but they have that as a separate listing. The spirituous part of wine and so on. So then when they say, when I look up Dadi Munda,
it's like it's thick part of yogurt. So yogurt is churned, and then the thick part is taken from yogurt is Dadi Munda.
The thick part of milk or cream
is Munda.
I don't know what they mean by the thick part of milk or cream. You can. From the Swetashvatara.
The thick part of milk is cream. That's
mine.
His
cream, yeah.
And then the thick part of yogurt was that?
Butter? Dadhi. Yeah. Dadhi, coagulated milk, thick sour milk, regarding as a remedy different from curd and not having the whey separated from it. That's their take on dadhi. Because they don't know the word yogurt in those days. And then when you look up this, the Dadi Munda, right here, whey. And then they cite having whey as a liquid, an ocean. Bhagavata Purana, Canto 5. There it is. So I'm just telling you, they say it's whey. Prabhupada says emulsified yogurt or churned yogurt. Emulsified yogurt would mean where there's not a lot of lumps in it, it's smoothed out.
Shrikhand.
Yes.
Like Shrikhand?
Exactly.
Doesn't Shrikhand have, yeah, Shrikhand is yogurt that's been strained.
And it's very thick.
And it's thick.
Lumps.
That's right. Could be Shrikhand, an ocean of Shrikhand. Oh, there you're talking about. Of course, we have to add sugar to it to make it really nice.
Yes, then we have the ocean of sugarcane juice.
Yeah, you add them together.
And you go on a pilgrimage and you do something.
So, Shakaladweep is surrounded by an ocean of churned yogurt as broad as the island itself, and Shakaladweep is a big shaka tree from which the island takes its name. As far as I know, the shaka tree is a teak tree. Prabhupada says here, Mahiruha, a fig tree, but Mahiruha also is listed in the dictionary as a teak, as the name of a teak tree. The same Latin name, so I don't know. Teak. Sariputta says teak also. Teak is usually used for wood. But this says, from which the island takes its name, the tree is very fragrant. It lends itself, its scent to the entire island.
Just one information, I'm sorry.
Huh?
The yogurt, you mentioned the yogurt in the States. They didn't know about it until.
Yeah, I was around, but nobody even heard of it. In the early 60s, I met people who never heard of it before. Now, we're really getting off on tangents here, but I'll go ahead. How do you spell yogurt?
Y-O-G-H-U-R-T.
It would have been in England before it had been in America.
Y-O-G-H.
That's right, huh? Diet of yogurt, Y-O-G-U-R-T, okay. Turkey. See, the word comes from a Turkish word. Properly, a sour fermented liquor made from milk used in Turkey and other countries of the Levant, means the Near East, now common in many English-speaking countries as a commercial, semi-softened, often flavored food stuff. So it was in the early attestations, you see, every time you see or people are talking about it, they're talking about foreign countries. You don't see it till 1934 in England, somebody's eating her morning yogurt, and she was thought very strange. Evelyn Waugh says, Mrs. Beaver stood with her back to the fire, eating her morning yogurt. She held this carton close under her chin and gobbled with a spoon. So yogurt was really weird, even in 1955. Even in 1980, in the New Sunday Times, Stokowski was concerned with retaining his youth, and Garbo, always a food faddist, was into yogurt and yoga and yogurt experience. So you understand, it was weird in the English-speaking world until now. It's like common. But it's, you know, you get it everywhere because it became a health food and then it was good for you, then everybody wanted it. So naturally, they did think it to it. It used to be you could at least get yogurt. Now in America, it has, what do you call it, rennet in it, gelatin in it, and all this stuff, you know. But not this yogurt. This is good yogurt. So this island here, we're talking about Shakadweep, as the sun named Medha Tithi. I didn't find this word in the dictionary. The parts mean, Medha means a sacrifice, specifically an animal sacrifice, and Tithi, as we know that already, the lunar day. So it means the day on which sacrifice is performed. So he divided up the island and fixed his mind on the to his sons and invested his mind in the Supreme Personality of Godhead and entered the Tapavan, the forest where austerities are performed. It's Medha Tithi. That's what he did. I didn't find it together in the dictionary, but Medha means sacrifice. And Tithi is the lunar day. Yeah. So it must be the day on which sacrifice is performed, something like that. But I didn't write it down because I can only, the meanings of compounds are sometimes.
What about Atithi?
Huh?
Could be Atithi.
There could be Atithi, but what is an Atithi?
Atithi
means
Atithi.
I assume it means, you know, Medha
Tithi.
Okay. But see, that's why I didn't write anything down, because it could be.
Could be,
yeah. The same with the next one, Vidhi Hotra. That one's a little hard, too. Again, seven mountains, seven rivers, and their castes. These are the Vratas here, the Ritta Vratas, Satya Vratas, Dana Vratas, and Anu Vratas. That's pretty. the vow of Ritta, the vow of Satya, two different names for truth, but one's higher than the other, Rittas. And Satya and Dana, the Vratas give the vow of charity, and Anu, the vow of charity, which exactly resemble, therefore. And they worship the Lord in the form of Vayu here. So Surya, Soma, Agni, Varuna, Vayu, air. So again, Antaryami Ishwaraha is the super soul in the body. You direct the various actions of the different airs, such as prana, and thus you maintain all living entities. O Lord, Super Soul, or everyone, are controlled of the cosmic manifestation under whom everything direct exists. May you protect us from all dangers. Where does it say they perform? Does it say this here? Yeah, they perform pranayama. He says in trance, but see, their method is pranayama. You see that in the word? They worship him with whose passion and ignorance has been cleaned away by pranayama. And they worship him parama samadhina yajante. They worship him in trance, paramasa. They practice pranayama, yeah, he says it here, they practice pranayama and mystic yoga. So therefore Vayu, who is the lord of the airs in the pranayama, deal with. So finally, we come to the last of the annular islands outside of Yogurt, is Pushkaradweep. Now you're getting a really wide island, twice as wide as the ocean of Yogurt. Now this is surrounded by sweet water. Swadu Udaka, sweet water ocean. Now Pushkaradweep, the eponymous is a lotus, for Pushkar is a lotus. A great lotus flower with 100 million pure golden petals, as effulgent as the flames of fire. Here's another plant that looks like fire. Pure golden petals. I don't know if it's a plant that's golden or Amala Kanaka, pure gold leaves, Patra. Anyway, this golden lotus is considered the sitting place of Lord Brahma.
So Manasotara Mountain is in Pushkar, right?
Huh? Yeah, I put it afterwards just for convenience sake, because I wanted to have the information about the Pushkar Dweep. The Pushkar is bisected by this concentric mountain called Manasotara. That's the other feature, is this mountain. In the middle of the mountain, middle of the island, is a great mountain named Manasotara, which forms the boundary between the inner and the outer sides of the island. So it's right in the center, dividing it in half. Its breadth and height, that is to say its thickness, are 10,000 yojanas. It goes up 10,000 yojanas, and it's 10,000 yojanas wide at its base, assuming there's a mountain that narrows at the top. On the mountain in the four directions are the residential quarters of the demigods, such as Indra. Here, the residential quarters, we get them in the next chapter. On the east is Indra. Just something like the top of Mount Meru, but there they have the eight directions. And one difference is in the north, where they had Mount Meru has Kubera, here's Soma, with his city called Vibhavari, as in Vibhavarichesha Aloka. Varuna, Limlochini, in the south, Yama, Samyamani, Samyamani, and the east, Devadhani. These are so in four places, they have their, what Prabhupada calls their residential quarters, Pura, their cities. This is what the word is here. The cities of the Lokapalas. In the chariot of the sun god, the sun travels on the top of the mountain in an orbit called the Samvatsara, encircling Mount Meru. Okay.
It says quite clearly that the sun itself is situated within the chariot.
This is the way it says here. Let's see. Surya Rat, the chariot of the sun god, it says. It's talking about not Surya, but Surya Rad. Circumambulating, and that circumambulation is, the orbit is called the Samvatsara, which means a year. Half of it is called the Uttarayana, the path on the northern side, which corresponds to what we call a summer, right? And then the path on the southern side is called Dakshinayana. Like if you look out at the sun now, morning, noon, and night, it's all off to the south. This is the south, this is the north. And you'll see the sun is not overhead. It's way over this way. And as we get warm more towards summer, it'll go like that. Its orbit will rise further and further to the north, and it'll sink further to the north, and at noon it'll be overhead further and further to the north. In Philadelphia, where I chant japa, I have a little room that looks out toward the south, and I can see, like, in the summertime the sun is way over here, and then it, like in the winter, it's over here. When it comes up, I just watch the sunrise. When it comes up, it's, then it comes up way over here, and then it goes, and it's like a kind of a long distance from one end to the other. What is this, 24 degrees or 23 and a half degrees or something? Anyway, so the northern side is called the Uttarayana, the path on the Uttara, the north, and the Dakshina. Dakshina means right, and that always means south. Because you're facing east always. So the south is always the right. One side represents day for the demigods, because six of our months is one of their days, and the other represents their night. And in this he's saying, Devanam Aha Rachibhyam, which makes the day and the nights, consisting of a chakram, a wheel or an orbit. The name of this wheel, we'll learn in the next chapter, is also called Samvatsara. But here it seems to be the orbit, the cycle, orbital cycle of the sun, which is circumambulating. What seems to be the case, we find out later on, that the chariot has one wheel. And it has an axle that goes all the way to Mount Meru. A very long axle. And so I don't know exactly where the sun is situated along that axle. If he goes to the north and the south, it seems like he can move further and closer away, this way, you know. Because other places in the Puranas refers to him crossing the oceans, and he's just on Manasotra Mountain. So, but the next chapter, there's a very detailed description of his chariot, those things like that. But this is, at least we know that a wheel, there's a track on the top of this mountain, I assume a track, that his wheel runs on as it goes around.
The axle is just sticking out of one side of the wheel, is that what it is?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the way it seems to be. Now, this is a little confusing to me. Prabhupada just says the same thing. This is a little confusing to me, because if you take it that the sun is right on the axle, he's very, very close all the time to Bhumandala. Only the mountain is 10,000 yojanas, and then whatever the diameter or the radius of the wheel is, that's how far, how high the axle is. Meru is 84,000 yojanas no, 84. It's 100,000 yojanas high. Yeah, so 84,000 yojanas high. So that would put him higher. So maybe there's a really big, tall wheel or something that's level. I don't know. I mean, I'm just trying to figure this stuff out. I can't do it. But then the sun, the next chapter puts the sun at a distance of above Bhumandala. You remember what it is? It tells you that just second chapter after next.
Has anyone calculated the diameter of the round of the wheel?
No, I haven't, but you could.
How many times does it, the wheel turn around as it goes one round?
Yeah, you'd have to do that if it, yeah.
So I have a feeling it's 360.
360 times around? Maybe.
And if the sun is somewhere on the wheel, so going up and down, going up.
But you look at the wheel, the whole apparatus of the chariot of the sun god, is all very symbolic and maybe allegorical. His horses have the names of various Vedic meters. I don't know if this description of the sun god is more like something you meditate on, like the universal form, rather than, you know, an astronomical feature. But I'm not quite sure about all that. The next chapter describes this chariot and the yoke, which is some gigantic size, 900,000 yojanas. How do you yoke horses? I never saw a yoke for horses. I mean, anyway, I forgot how many horses. Anyway, we'll have to see. Anyway, that's what it says there about the Manasotra mountain. We'll get more into this later. The ruler is named Vitihotra. Hotra means what a hotri, the priest, does, a sacrifice of a certain kind. Viti, I'm not sure what that means. I could not find that word in the dictionary, so I'm at a loss. There's several options, I couldn't decide. But anyway, it shows up, the name Vitihotra shows up quite a bit. But this one has two sons, because there's only two varshas, because it's divided in half annually. So he gave two sides of the island, and like his other brothers, he retired for meditation on the Supreme Lord. Now it says here about the people of this Varsha, in order to fulfill their material desires, it really says this, sakarmaka karmana. So for the sake of their karma, they perform ritualistic activities, worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Brahma Rupinam, exhibited as Lord Brahma being seated on the lotus. So they offer prayers to the Lord as follows. They worship Brahma. Lord Brahma is known as Karma Maya, the form of ritualistic ceremonies. Because by performing ritualistic ceremonies, one may attain his position. And because the Vedic ritual hymns become manifest from him. You see how Prabhupada is expanding this. Why is he Karma Maya? Well, that's a few things. He's devoted to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Brahma Lingam, without deviation, and therefore in one sense he's not different from the Lord. Nevertheless, he should not be worshipped just not as the monist worships him, but in duality. Must worship him as a jana, as an individual. One should always remain the servant to the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Worshipful Deity. Ekantam. We offer our respect relation to Brahma, the form manifest of Vedic knowledge. Then is the, then it says, beyond the ocean of sweet water and fully surrounding is a mountain named Lokaloka. So they go from the sweet water ocean to this boundary mountain called Lokaloka, which divides the countries that are full of sunlight from those not lit by the sun. Now we'll get to that mountain. Before going there, this is something that I, there is said to be another land, as Prabhupada says here, beyond the ocean of sweet water is a tract of land as broad as the area between the middle of Mount Sumeru and the boundary of Manasotra Mountain. So that distance that you have here, right here, as one 15,750,000 yojanas. That distance.
This distance from
is a tract of land as broad as the area. So you have the whole radius between the middle of Mount Sumeru and the boundary of Manasotra Mountain. That's the rate, that distance we've just traveled all the way out. There's another tract of land which is the same width as that. Now, then Prabhupada writes, in that tract of land there are many living beings. Beyond it, extending to Lokaloka Mountain, is another land which is made of gold. Now, I cannot find in the text two lands mentioned. You can see the word for word. As much as Manasota Mera Antaram, the land between Manasota and Meru, that much, then he says, Bhumi Kanchani Anya, another land which is Bhumi Kanchana, Adarshatala Upama, whose surface is just like the surface of a mirror, on which something, you drop something, you lose it. It vanishes in the glare, and therefore, everyone who used to live there left. I really don't understand where this place that's called Loka, a separate place called Loka, comes from. It may be in a commentary, but Sariputta says in his little survey in his book that the Srimad Bhagavatam is the only one that has Loka. But here I don't even see it in this text, so I'm not quite sure where it comes from. I have to look at the commentators and see if somebody there mentions it. But when going, trying to go through Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's reasoning so he could get a gap between the edge of Bhumandala, but also I didn't see any mention of this place called Loka. So I'm a little puzzled about this. But anyway, I'm following this here, and I'm giving this Loka this dimension that's equal to the whole diameter, I mean radius from Manasotra Mountain up to, between Meru and Manasotra, which is 15,750,000 yojanas. 1 crore, 57 and a half lakhs, if you like, lakhs and crores, in width. Then beyond that is this Kanchana. So I don't know where this, how this. Then you come to the Lokaloka. Beyond, between the land inhabited by living entities and those that are that uninhabited. Now that loka and aloka could simply mean everything, the whole, everything so far. all inhabits it from Meru on out. And now here, even Kanchabhumi, it implies, was inhabited, but everybody had to leave. Stands the great mountain which separates the two, and therefore celebrated as Loka Aloka. Loka meaning with people, and Aloka without people or residents. Now this Loka mountain, by the supreme will of Krishna, the mountain as Loka has been installed at the outer border of the three worlds, Burva and Swa, to control the rays of the sun throughout the universe. That word control is very interesting, but I'm not quite sure what the whole point, how it controls the rays of the sun other than blocking them or confining them. Throughout the universe, all the luminaries from the sun up to Dhruvaloka distribute their rays to the three worlds, but only within the boundary formed by this mountain. So the mountain goes way up there, Dhruvaloka. It's very, very tall. It's a screen mountain. I don't know when they say Bhumanda is like a lotus, whether these are like the kind of lotus petals that are like it, you know, come up.
Closed
or enclosed at night. But it's very confining. So, see, theoretically, if you looked out in certain directions, you would only be able to see so far, and there would be this screen, which is Loka Mountain, which goes all the way around. It's like a circular mountain also. It's very high. We can look and see how high Dhruvaloka is, and so maybe a little higher than Dhruvaloka. It's the three worlds, Bhur, Bhuva, and Swa. Then, you know, Janaloka, Maharloka, Satchaloka, those are not confined. But it confines the sunlight, so it is blocked off. I just wondered if it was reflective, but the mirror is at the bottom, not on it. If it were reflective, it would be very interesting. Because when you looked out, you just see light is bouncing back and forth all the time. Like a mirror, huh?
If it has any pieces of mirror or shiny objects on it, it may appear as a
I don't know. Well, yeah. Maybe we're confused, huh? Because it is extremely high, extending even higher than Dhruvaloka, it blocks the rays of the luminaries, which therefore can never extend beyond it. That's really far out. Not only that, the outer boundary of all the lokas. Now see, it says to distribute the rays of the sun and other luminaries. It's like it's reflective in some way. How does it distribute the rays of the sun? That's what Prabhupada says. I just want to read the commentaries on this one. I didn't get this far with my Sanskrit guys. See, I'm sorry. To distribute the rays of the sun. Huh? He says that. The vivid description of how the rays of the sun are distributed throughout the different planetary systems of the universe is very scientific. Then he says this goes back a long time, whereas modern scientific knowledge doesn't go back more than a few hundred years. They don't accept this factual presentation. So it seems that it has some function in light of the sun and other luminaries, according to Prabhupada, what it is and how it works. Then Prabhupada, then the text says learned scholars, and Prabhupada adds, explaining learned scholars, who are free from mistakes, illusions, and propensities to cheat, have thus described the planetary system and their particular symptoms, measurements, and locations with great deliberation. They have established the truth that the distance between Sumeru and the mountain known as Loka Aloka is 1/4 the diameter of the universe, or in other words, 125 million yojanas. That's the half of the radius. Then we come to this interesting place where Vishnu Chakravarti gives an accurate astronomical information about the location of Lokaloka Mountain, the movements of the sun globe, and the sun and the circumference of the universe. However, the technical terms used in this astronomical calculation given by the Jetya Veda are very difficult to translate into English. Therefore, to satisfy the reader, we may include the exact Sanskrit statement given by Chakravarti Thakur, which records exact calculations regarding universe affairs. So the translation by Gopi Purana Dana was commissioned by Dhanavira Swami, who included it in his book. And I have been through it for the last 3 days. And as translated, some of it's just wrong. I can see that. Because there it says, for example, that the distance between Manasotara Mountain and the Sweetwater, to the Sweetwater River, Sweetwater Ocean, is 96,000 getting mixed up here. 9,600,000 yojanas. But it's not. From the Manasotara Mountain to the Sweetwater is half of the width of Puskara Dweep, which is 3,200,000. If you include the Sweetwater Ocean, then you get that number. So what's translated as two must mean including, or two up to and including. But there's two used in several places that way. Anyway, I'm very confused because I tried to figure this out. Because what Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, he gives another way of calculating this distance out. Because he says is that the real diameter of Bhumandala is not really 500 million yojanas. It's 500 million yojanas minus 34 lakhs, 3,400,000. He calculates that difference and says that means that at either end there's a gap of 17 lakhs, 1,700,000 yojanas on either side. And he handed me the book. I'll read you his conclusion. Therefore, since there is an empty space present of 17 lakhs yojanas on all sides, so 34, you know, if you take the diameter, it is feasible that the earth is held up by Sheshanaga because of its, he says here, and kept steady by the elephants of all directions on the top of this mountain are the four elephants who stabilize, it says, their sthiti. They balance or stabilize the...
On top of
Lokaloka, next text, are four Gajapatis, best of elephants, which were established in the four directions by Lord Brahma, the supreme spiritual master of the entire universe. The names of those elephants are Urshava, Puskara Chuda, Vamana, and Aparajita. We should remember those elephants with reverence because they do a great service. They are responsible for maintaining the planetary systems of the universe. What it says here in the Sanskrit, Sakala Loka Stiti Hetala, they are the cause of the stiti, which you could say the stability, if you wanted, the, you know, keeping situated all the lokas. So Vishnu Chakravarti says, and kept steady by the elephants of the directions. So it's on the top of Shesha's head, so a little wobble tendency, maybe the assumptions are there too. So maybe, you know, another Shesha component is the strong force, the elephants are the weak force, or something.
Is it another Shesha's hood or the hoods?
Sheshanaga.
Sorry, Sheshanaga's hood or hoods?
Bhumandala. At least I showed you that picture of an old picture. They have Bhumandala on his head.
One head?
No, he has a number of them.
I know he has a number of them.
No, even more than one head.
How many of them hold them up?
I don't know.
Anyway, because the ocean is turbulent, you know?
I don't know. I mean, you know, you think about this all night long. Otherwise, if he gave a different explanation, making Bhu extend 50 crores, that's 500 million yojanas, it would be stuck to the shell of the universe, and these ideas, that is of Shesha, and the elephants keeping the earth in place, would be meaningless. It would also not have been feasible in the Chakshusha Manvantara for the earth to suddenly become submerged and then be lifted up by Sri Varahadeva. We should take these and similar facts into consideration. There's some other facts to be considered, because the diameter of Bhumandala, if the ocean is halfway up, then if Bhumandala is above the ocean, it's not going to be it's the full diameter. It's going to be a section of the... So I want to know how far the earth, the water fills up. Is Bhumandala right in the middle, in the ocean? It's not very much distance, as you can bear, but anyway, that's another question I have.
Well, we have to check the height of the universe. Is it there?
Well, if the inside diameter is 50 crores of yojanas, that's the...
Diameter is an egg, not a sphere, right? And if it's an egg, the lower part of the egg is wider than the top.
Some eggs are round.
Well, yes.
Depends on what kind of egg you're talking about.
Then,
huh?
You know,
it
could be on its side. Or
yeah, it could be longer than wide.
Yeah. I mean, could call it, you know, it's called Brahmanda. Brown egg of Brahma, and not the sphere.
Some eggs are round.
Yeah, like, for shapes are round.
Yes, some eggs, but then why doesn't it say a sphere and it says an egg?
Maybe because of the concept of creation.
Because it's exact when it describes.
This chapter ends with a very beautiful description of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Oh, I'm sorry. May I interrupt with one more question?
One more about eggs?
Loka mountain, which is up, it says, Sarah is there beyond Dhruva Loka.
Yes.
So the Dhruva Loka is, you know, in the top of the universe, not in the
universe. Oh no, it's not at all at the top of the universe.
So it's not, you know, stuck up
here? Oh, no. Beyond Dhruva Loka is Mahaloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, Satyaloka. And if you look at the pictures provided for us by the DVD, where's my little book? Yeah, there's a book here, I think I have that picture. They show yeah, here they go. So here, and this little, this is a blow up, but just this blow up is right, just right up to here, right? Here is, this is half of the universe, right? So up here is Dhruva Loka. It's this far up. No, excuse me, here's Dhruva Loka, down here. Then there's Mahaloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, Satyaloka. And then this little thing down here, the little section here, up to the planets and everything, and here's the Earths and everything, is this little bitty thing right below. So here, this shows here, you know, you can't even see where it is, but down here, right here, is, you know, Bhumandala. Mm-hmm. Which has got to go all the way there. They're just showing you the distances, yeah, here. And then they show the sun, moon, stars, this 28 nakshatras, Venus, Mercury, Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn. They don't go any further than Saturn.
Does it show the distance of the sun from?
Yes, it does.
So basically, if you compare the distance of Bhumandala from the Garbha Ocean with the distance of the top of the universe from the Garbha Ocean,
it's just sort of like really, relatively speaking, almost on top of it.
Yeah. So it's not too hard to get submerged in the water.
Easy.
Yeah.
But does it actually say in the text itself that the mountain is that high? Because in Prabhupada's translation, it's there.
Yeah, the text doesn't really say that. That's why we have to do this thing and, you know, translate all the commentaries and things like that. Because the text actually says, the text literally says that it mentions as the outer border of the three worlds, I think is what the text says.
But at the end, it says something about...
At the ante, Lokatraya ante, at the end of the three worlds, all around, up to Dhruva Apavarga, and the other inferior luminaries, yeah. Oh, I see, from which the sun, Dhruva, and the other luminaries. So they mentioned Dhruva in here too.
So then at the end it just says that much, the measure of the mountain. Just in the Vishnu Purana, usually these measurements are quite similar, and in the Vishnu Purana the Lokaloka is 10,000 yojanas high.
Oh, that's very really small.
Yeah.
Wow, but this one here, it's got at least the boundary of the three worlds, huh? Which means it's huge. So Lokatraya ante, the end of the three lokas, all around, Bharitaha. From which?
According to Bhagavatam, all the way to the top of the universe?
No, not at all.
Dhruva Loka.
Yeah,
but it's considerably higher than the 10,000 yojanas as described in Vishnu Purana, right?
Yeah, a whole lot higher.
Yeah.
But what I'm asking is whether it's there in the Sanskrit or it's...
The Sanskrit doesn't give any number. What the Sanskrit says, as far as I can see, at the end of the three lokas, so definitely Bhur, Bhuva, and Swa. But Dhruva Loka is... it doesn't say here exactly. I can't tell from this drawing. Yeah, there's a table inside of Pooja's book. Where he gives the distances.
And you see this big poster that somebody made? Colorful poster about, you know,
I had that poster somewhere.
Who produced that?
I think some Narayan Maharaj people did that one. Yeah, it's right in here. The numbers I would have to add it up. They give the distances from one to the next or not.
But the sun is the first one.
Yeah, the moon is the second. The moon is like going up from, but they have their orbits too, you know, and so. I can't find this chart now. I don't know where it is. Oh, here we go. Yeah, okay. Starting at Bhumandala, the next feature up is Rahu and Ketu, which is 90,000 yojanas. Then the sun is 100,000 yojanas. Then the moon is 200,000 yojanas.
Now the 100,000 is again coming
about Rahu and Ketu.
Huh? From not Jambuli, from Bhumandala. Mm-hmm. Bhumandala is zero. Then 90,000 yojanas up is Rahu and Ketu. Then you go another 10 and you got the sun. They're very close to the sun because that's how they can do eclipses. Mm-hmm. And then you go 100,000 and there's a moon. You go up another 100,000. It's 200,000 yojanas from here. Then they have the sun, moon, and Dhruvaloka. In this chart, it has the nakshastras, the saptarshis, and Dhruvaloka. Dhruvaloka is 1,300,000. No, total height of Bhumandala is 3,800,000 yojanas. The suggestion is here that that's the height of this Manasotra mountain, which is more like a lampshade than a mountain, something like a closing screen. Excuse me, Loka. I'm sorry, I said the wrong mountain. Wonder who has associated
the sun is 100,000 and one actual sitting on Mount Meru, which is at 84,000.
And that would mean the sun would be going directly over the wheel then, and not further in. Because we were wondering where in that space of the width the sun is located. Because it also describes the size of the chariot in the next chapter. So you can see it just exactly how wide. Of course, the width of the chariot is the full width, 900,000. No problem.
That's the yoke.
Yeah, but the width of the chariot is the same.
Chariot is 100,000 high?
Why? Not made allowed to be uncircled.
But it has one wheel, right?
Yeah, one wheel. But
the wheel is not that high. The chariot is 100,000 high.
The axis and not what?
On the axis.
In the back, in the lower axis.
Well, the actual one side sits on Mount Meru, and the other side sits in the wheel.
Yes.
Right. And then the chariot sits in between those two, the wheel and the mountain.
The wheel and no wheel.
The wheel.
Maybe I can't find any more in here, Mark. This index seems to be off. There you go. Okay, we've gone way over time. So we'll keep on going. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Do you think that Yaksha was